Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to The Diplomat, brought to you by Newsweek. I'm your host, Jason Greenblatt. With tensions rising across the world, diplomacy is needed perhaps now more than ever. During my time as former White House Middle East envoy and as one of the chief architects of peace between Israel and its Arab neighbors, I've had the chance to witness the power of diplomacy firsthand, and today I would like to share that perspective with you. Shalom, salam, and welcome to The Diplomat. It was great to have Her Excellency Mariam El-Mahiri, the Minister of Climate Change and Environment in the United Arab Emirates, as a guest today. Climate change is on everybody's mind. Energy prices now more than ever. Food security, water security, again, always important, but now more than ever, even more important. The United Arab Emirates, the UAE, is a place that I hold dear in my heart because of my work for several years in the White House. Amazing country, amazing, courageous leadership. Signing the Abraham Accords was a huge development in the Middle East and changed so many lives, millions and millions of lives. And hopefully it's just the beginning on this long, complicated, tangled road of peace. But Minister El-Mahiri, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for having me, and thank you to all our listeners.
So let's start by talking about you and this unique role, Minister of Climate Change, really interesting title. When did the UAE create this position, and how did you end up in this position?
Okay. So first of all, the Ministry of Climate Change and Environment was established in 2016, replacing the Ministry of Environment and Water. And basically, it represents an important milestone in the UAE's journey in really putting climate action and environmental protection at the heart of what we do. And it really basically formalized national efforts to address climate change and also ensure that we're mitigating its impacts on ecosystems and economies as well. My father is Emirati, my mom is German. And basically, I grew up with the best of both worlds, I guess. My mother coming from a farmer's family. My father, if you look back, it came up from a fisheries family. So basically, I learned a lot about sustainability. I learned a lot about respecting food. I learned a lot about appreciating what we have. And I also learned about the hardships of how to be sustainable in hot, arid climates like here in the UAE. So basically, I studied in Germany. I studied mechanical engineering at the Rheinisch-Westfälische Technische Hochschule, also known as the RWTH Aachen. And I did mechanical engineering. I then came over back to the UAE to work here. And I started a hobby of diving in the sea and really looking at the jewels that we have in the sea. And I was always so surprised at what I could see that actually lives in the sea and that can actually withstand some of the range of temperatures that the sea goes through and the salinity that we have. And I guess that was the journey or the first part of my journey in my career in becoming who I am today. I started off as a junior staff at the then Ministry of Environment and Water. I was then Assistant Undersecretary for Water Resources and Nature Conservation at that ministry. Then I was appointed Minister of State for Food Security in 2017. After that, I also received the water security mandate. And then in September 2021, I was appointed a cabinet member and minister for climate change and environment, taking on all the other mandates that I had before. So food security is also part of what it is I'm doing today. So it's very exciting because Us being the Ministry of Climate Change since 2016, we're actually the first in the Middle East of doing so. And I myself, being a minister for climate change and environment, is also a first in the region as well. And it really shows that the UAE, in all the steps that we've taken on our journey for climate action, this was also one of them.
So you talk about food security and water security for that matter. And it's interesting to me that we now have to tie the word security to those items. In fact, I was reading that even in the US, our National Security Council is now tying water security to national security. Let's talk about the food tech hub in Dubai, which is intended, as I understand it, to boost the UAE's food security, the Food Valley. Tell us about that and what it does.
So before I go into what Food Tech Valley is, Jason, it's really important to understand that water, energy and food are very much interlinked. When you need water and energy to grow food. So these three elements are extremely interlinked. And that's why when they talk about securities and each of these elements, it is of national security. When you think of water, when you think of energy, when you think of food, it all has a relation to a national security of the country. Now, for us, a Food Tech Valley the idea came about. I mean, I visited so many places around the world that have created these ecosystems. The US, for example, has the Silicon Valley. And this is basically, I like to call it a playground where you develop technologies, you develop innovations for future-oriented solutions. And this is exactly why we wanted to, why we launched Food Tech Valley was about how the UAE is taking steps to transition its food systems into more sustainable ones. We have something called the Masdar City here in the UAE. Masdar was established in 2006 and really helped spur the UAE on its energy transition. And we want to do the same with Food Tech Valley. So Food Tech Valley is an 18 million square foot area. It will have an innovation center in it. It's being developed now as we speak. We're now finalizing some anchor clients to come into the space. It's really a first of its kind ag city or ag tech city. And it's really going to spearhead a regional transformation to more sustainable food systems.
And is it the UAE's intention to become a global superpower in food tech, a regional superpower? Tell us how that fits into the overall plan.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was appointed Minister of State for Food Security, Jason, in 2017, His Highness, the Prime Minister, said to me, "Mariam, I need you to focus on three things. We need to have a plan, we need to advance R&D, and we need to adopt technology and innovation." So with that, we developed a national food security strategy. And this strategy is all about ensuring that the UAE becomes a world-leading hub for innovation-driven food security. And this is why Food Tech Valley is such an important ecosystem to really advance our next generation innovative solutions for climate resilient food systems. And that's why we believe Food Tech Valley is not just going to serve the UAE, but is going to be a super powerhouse, as you said, to push this transformation that is needed. And especially we are a hot, arid country. We're water scarce. We don't have much arable land. And this is why it's really important that we spur on the innovation and technology to help other countries that have the same kind of challenges that we do in ensuring that we look at our food systems and make them more sustainable.
Were you able to be ahead of the curve? You know, we have supply chain disruptions all over the world. We're hit very hard by it. First, of course, by COVID, now by the war, by the vicious attack of Ukraine. Were you able to get ahead of that, or you too have had challenges?
So it was really interesting, Jason, because as I said, 2017, I was appointed. 2018, we launched the National Food Security Strategy of the UAE. 2019, we finalized the governance model of how we're going to implement the strategy. And what happened 2020? We got hit by COVID, just like everybody else. And in a way, it was a test for us to see how resilient and how good the strategy was and all the programs we had planned for it. And so we were put to the test, basically. And as you know, food security, when you look at it, you have to look at a lot of aspects of food security. You're looking at the accessibility of food, you're looking at the availability of food, you're looking at the affordability, and you're looking at the utilization. And with that, we made sure that in our plan, we're taking that holistic approach. And so when COVID hit, because we had already finalized the governance, and the most, like, the heart of the governance was the Emirates Food Security Council. And basically this council is made up of all the relevant, relevant players and stakeholders in the food security domain of the UAE. And with that, we were able to take quick decisions on all the hindrances or all the restrictions that came about through COVID. So some countries restricted their exports. Some of the ag tech companies were not able to get supplies of certain items for agriculture inputs. So this council was really used to communicate quickly. And by the way, this was key through COVID, communication and having the political will. And so we had set up something called the evaluation and monitoring team. They were always in touch with the customs to make sure that all food items that were main food items for the country, that they were coming in at a certain frequency that we were used to. As soon as we saw the frequency was stopping or reducing, we would take action. We also were very much monitoring what was happening globally through the global food balance sheets and the AMIS reports, which are the agriculture market info systems. We were in touch with the international organization, the FAO, the World Health Organization. We were also tapping into our food security alliance companies. These are companies from the UAE that have invested outside of the UAE in food security endeavors, and basically made sure that we were in touch with them in case we had any supplies stopping of certain items, that they could also supply us. We also got in touch with all the local producers and tried to help them if there were any bottlenecks for them to increase their capacities. We also adopted a coordination plan with all retailers in the UAE. So that was about 80% of all retailers of the UAE, to make sure we had coordination. We were talking to each other. We used repatriation flights to bring in food to the country. We used our ambassadors that were outside in different countries to ensure they communicated with us if certain restrictions were happening. So, and one of the main things as well, Jason, is that our leadership communicated always with the public. So we were always in touch with them. Their Highnesses always said to the people, medicine and food is a red line. We will always ensure that you have what you need when it comes to food and medicine. And with that, there was a sense of comfort upon the people. So there wasn't the going to the supermarkets and buying large quantities. And so those things didn't happen. I'm really thankful to say that through this coordination that we had, through the excellent political will, we were really able to showcase that the plan we had was resilient, and also the governance was effective, because we didn't have a day where any main food items, I'm talking about main food security items, not all foods, but main food items, were always on the shelves for the community. So it was a great test.
We're going to take a break. You have been listening to The Diplomat, brought to you by Newsweek.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back to The Diplomat, brought to you by Newsweek. Well, we talk about the leadership. So some people say the UAE and countries of that size fared reasonably well during COVID because they're small. I would argue the opposite. I would argue it could be a small country and fail too. But on the contrary, I think the leadership took a very, very strong approach and communication. And I managed to get into the UAE several times during COVID, and I was amazed how things were as normal as they could be. I think the only thing that struck me as strange in a good way was how they enforced the rules. You know, the police would come over and, sir, please do this, please put on your mask. You know, you wouldn't see that all the time, but I think they did great. And I, one of the, maybe the best example I can think of in terms of the leadership is seeing Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed go to get his own inoculation. You know, he gets in the car, on the driver's line and got his shot. And, you know, I think it starts from the top. So I've always been very impressed by the leadership.
We very much look up to our leadership. They lead by example, they walk the talk, and they are so close to us. It's really, I can only say it's a blessing for us. And even myself, as a woman, I'm empowered. I get to express my ideas, and it's just a blessing to have such leadership. And going through COVID, I think the UAE, I mean, just think of Expo that happened here in the UAE. I mean, we were over the 23 million visitors that visited Expo. I mean, you can think of all the back planning that was happening, all the procedures that had to be followed at the airport, at the expo grounds. And, you know, I can only say thank you to all those that actually made this a success, and the leadership played a huge role in this.
Indeed. And speaking of leadership again, without the bold and courageous leadership, there would be no Abraham Accords. How have the Abraham Accords factored in to the work that you do? Has there been cooperation with Israel, with the Israeli government, with Israeli companies on what you do?
Absolutely, absolutely. This has been a game changer, Jason. And I mean, I've got some numbers here. I mean, just 2 weeks ago, between Israel and the UAE is now a free trade agreement. This was completed after a 5-month negotiation. We've had well over 250,000 Israelis visit here, the UAE. There's been already trade exceeded over $300 million with over 120 agreements already in place between the two countries. I myself visited Israel last year with a delegation, and also my counterpart has visited the UAE. We've had several talks and projects are undergoing. As you can imagine, when you're talking on the sector that I take care of, especially on the agriculture, Israel really leads the innovation and technology part. For us, we have the state-of-the-art logistical infrastructure and the access to so many markets. So it's really a win-win situation, and you're going to see a lot of projects happening between us.
The UAE and others in the region are diversifying away from oil. How helpful is that for what you do, and how much of a role does your office play in that?
So just to give our listeners a little bit of an idea of, so we started our journey on diversifying away from oil and gas already a good 16 years ago. Our leadership saw the writing on the wall and said, you know, we have oil and gas, but we need to start investing and diversifying from oil and gas because eventually we want to move away from it. And so it's been a journey we've taken. We were the first in the region to sign and ratify the Paris Agreement. We set up Masdar City, as I spoke about, as the ecosystem of developing renewables and clean energy. We host IRENA headquarters here in the UAE. UAE, we announced a net zero by 2050 strategic initiative just before COP26. So we've taken so many steps and now in our journey of diversifying away from oil and gas. And we have targets in place. So by 2050, we want to reach 50% clean and renewables energy in our energy mix. We're also well underway to reach the 14 gigawatts clean and renewable target by 2030. We have, or we're operating right now, the three largest in capacity, lowest in cost solar parks in the world. We also have a nuclear power plant that's up and running. And we've also invested a lot, not just in the country, but also outside of the UAE in over 70 countries in renewable energy facilities. So we've really become a knowledge hub for the renewables. And this is, so in our way, we're ramping up our clean and renewables using the money we get from the oil and gas, ramping up our renewables because we've got targets set. We want to move away from oil and gas. But at the same time, we're also decarbonizing our oil and gas sector because this is also, we believe this as global responsible citizens, this is something we have to do. ADNOC, our national oil company, just of this year, 1st of January, is now operating only on clean and renewable energy, so decarbonizing its activities, and is actually one of the lowest carbon emission oil and gas companies now in the world. So we're taking a two-pronged approach. We're ramping up our clean and renewables. We're decarbonizing our oil and gas, and eventually going to move away from it. At the same time, you need to understand, Jason, that as long as the world needs oil and gas, we will supply it, but we are taking very responsible steps and investing heavily in decarbonizing as much as possible, and also investing in clean and renewables, and also helping other countries with certain funds that we've set up to help them in the transition in this energy transition that we all are working towards under the climate agenda.
So that's really a great answer to the cynics and the skeptics who say that countries like the UAE and others who are oil producing, hydrocarbon producing nations shouldn't be a part of the climate change fight. I'll say that these are also the same people who, when gasoline prices go up to over $4 a gallon, they right away turn to you guys and say, please pump more, or not even please, pump more, right? So a lot of cynicism there, but it sounds like the UAE has been on top of this for quite some time, not only in its own country in terms of diversification, but helping others as well. So the attacks that say that the UAE shouldn't be part of this conversation to me sound very hollow.
Yeah, I'll give you something just for the listeners to think about. Having, or let's say producing, the materials you need for the renewables and clean sector, you need oil and gas to do that. So you need the equipment, the facilities, but you need the energy to pump into making that equipment to be able to have your equipment that you need for the renewable sector. You cannot just switch off oil and gas. We need to be very realistic about this, that this is a transition. This is a transition. And yes, we must take responsible steps about it, but we must be realistic in that. I mean, we're facing it right now. We're not ready yet. We're not ready to switch off oil and gas. And it's really important to understand that every country is at a different level, and we need to support each other, but we need to be realistic and pragmatic about it.
Last question. Tell me what your two most important goals are that you'd like to achieve while you hold this post.
So first of all, I'm extremely excited that I'm now planning with the rest of the country for COP28. It's such an exciting endeavor. I got my position as Minister of Climate Change and Environment just a few days before COP26. So I was able to experience COP26, and I'm really excited and honored as well that the UAE has won to host COP28 in 2023. So I'm really excited about that. We really want to deliver an inclusive event. We want to make sure that youth are at the heart of this event. I'm making sure they're in their conversation, in our conversations also as we speak now, as we develop the net zero by 2050 strategic initiative in the UAE. The youth are part of co-creating, co-developing this initiative. We want to make sure this is a solutions-based COP and really, you know, showcase to the world that, yes, as an oil and gas country, we are committed. We are committed to this journey. We see this as a journey of opportunity, and we see this as a journey of responsibilities that we have to do. So I'm very excited about that. I'm also excited about the whole conversation, not just on the energy transition, but also thinking of food systems transformation. I really believe that fixing the food systems will fix a lot of the world order problems that we have. And I think going on about food systems and understanding how we can make them more sustainable, how we can stop malnutrition, how we can stop and hunger. These are all important elements of transforming the food systems. So I'm really excited about the journey ahead. I know that the buzzwords of food security, climate change are really hot topics, and my ministry is responsible for all that. So I'm really excited about what we have or the opportunities that we have in the future. And I'm excited about the partnerships that we can build from it. Aim for Sea was one of those beautiful partnerships that we're spearheading now with the U.S. We're working now also on a global mangrove alliance. So there's a lot of exciting things happening. And we've got really good momentum going on. So very excited.
Well, Minister Al-Mahiri, thank you. Thank you for joining me on The Diplomat. Thanks for all your hard work in keeping the planet cleaner and keeping us safer. And really appreciate the time.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you, everyone. And please take care of yourselves.
Really happy that Her Excellency Mariam Al-Mahiri, the Minister of Climate Change and Environment in the United Arab Emirates, joined me today for the podcast to talk about things that are really important for people today: food security, water security, energy pricing, climate change. Important topics for today. Thanks for joining. I'm Jason Greenblatt. This is The Diplomat, brought to you by Newsweek.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.